I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and get going. And we've got an hour to do this. But I do think that this is one topic that practically, when you just get down to real practical terms, this is the topic where things get done or they don't get done in an organization. This comes right down, to management and leadership of an organization ultimately. So it's an important topic. So let's get on with it. Accountability structures, the difference between organizational accomplishment or mediocrity or just not even getting done. Just so we have some perspective, always got to put the stock slide, I didn't always look like a serious crossbreeding accident between a Sasquatch and a CPA. Here, my story is quick. I start out in music. You probably heard of people like Don McLean, Janice Ian, Charlie Daniels. All I had the same manager, but decided I didn't like the music business. So I breached my contract, but it was a 6-year contract. So I couldn't even play in a bar. Didn't even own a picture of myself legally. And I thought, well, I got to make a living. So I thought money's probably important. So, I knocked out. I taught myself how to program and became a system analyst and a CPA and all that. And then I saw a little ad that said hospice, and I thought it'd be cool to work in something herbal. So anyway, and tried a few kooky things, and it's worked out pretty well. Worked with a little bit less than 900 hospices, primarily in the United States, definitely Pacific Rim and some European, all that. Because let's face it, good management is good management across the globe. And then, this finishes the story out, then Shania Twain's guitar player, they remembered a few of my songs, and then the number got cut. And so I'm like half music, and you got the half hospice thing, both full-time gigs. Had one top 5 album last year on the Billboard charts, and another top 20, so last year was a good music year, too. So anyway, what do we have here? Bell curve. And the bell curve is always with us in the human experience, as for everything that can be measured. Now, the stupid idea out in the world, especially in healthcare, is that everything has to be measured. Well, no, it doesn't. In fact, the most important things in life are not measurable. Love, compassion, a hit song. Yeah. So, when we measure, we find this all over the place. And what do we find in the middle? The huddled masses. The 50th percentile. The place where all measures of central tendency converge into one. Mode, median. Mean, average, all that. So we're not interested in this. And you shouldn't be. Because that's not where the action is. We should aspire to live in the extremities of the bell curve. Over here, over here. Just like, let's just check some elementary things about our attitudes about hospice now. That reimbursement isn't enough. Oh, yeah? There's plenty, folks. We got to grow up and become professional managers. There's plenty. You got folks that are doing 28% margins and winning awards and out visiting folks. It's how we intentionally direct our resources and energy. So that's just one perspective. Our quality, what are of the 4,000 or 5,000, however you want to count the number of hospices, what are the 15 or 20 that are just outstanding? That is what I'm interested in. And the accountability thing. All those that live, especially in the upper strata of the bell curve, have accountability systems that are worked out. By the way, I like to view accountability as a spiritual thing. We are all, I think our lives mean something. Most people who work in hospice, we think we're more than a physical body. I think we're actually ultimately accountable for our lives and the impact that we have. So just to take a little bit of the
accountability
feel out. So never focus on the 50th percentile or the huddled masses. You're not going to find your answers. This is why you can't just call a hospice next door and find out what best practices are. They don't know. And if they do know, most of the time, knowing it's one thing, doing it takes some guts. Because I'll just say this, what happens when you live in the 90th percentile or outside? Do you think the world says, great job? They will hold you with contempt. Yeah, it's a lonely road. That's the truth. Well, I can't believe they're doing that. Okay, so accountability, a culture of accountability. The thing is, a lot of hospices cultures, and organizational structures probably with a lot of business entity, it's like sludge, man. It's just like you're pushing against dense matter. It's like, but we've got to move our cultures where accountability is not only accepted, but embraced. Accountability starts with a deep commitment to what? Quality. And valuing what you do. It's about caring enough or loving enough that no person is more important than the common purpose. So we got to, just like when I've trained thousands of hospice leaders. Anymore, it's harder core than it used to be. I won't let people out alive until I feel like they know how to manage. Or they know how to teach a visit, how to answer the phone, how to train people based on methods of master teachers. Where they know the metrics. Even the most elementary, I can go to an audience and say, what is the cost of medications on a percentage of net patient revenue for a typical hospice in America? And people don't know. Well, what's the 90th? We're paid to manage. If you don't even have that perspective, how can you call yourself a professional? By the way, it's 6.47%. I'm not saying you have to know it to that anal retentive amount, but you say, So we got to care about what we're doing enough that no person is favored or can get away with not doing it. Accountability. If you're unwilling to put blood on the floor, you have no business in a leadership position, as the ability to fire a person is a prerequisite to leadership. I know that's graphic from these nice hospice people. I want that image to be burned in. That's, if you're going to take a leadership position or whatever, if you can't pull the trigger, don't take the job. Here's the point. People have to know you mean what you say. And that you actually stand for something. And what you'll find is actually a paradox. The higher you take your standards, the more attractive you become as an organization and as a human being. The most talented among us only want to work for elite organizations. We do not want to work with the mediocre. So if you want to attract top-rung talent, have top-rung standards, and just increase that beingness, that where you can attract and retain top folks. I will fire everyone that works for me if they're not doing the standards or the job. We'd be far, you know. But that's where it's got to be. Okay. Accountability. You have to care less about being liked and more about being effective. You know, or you see the vision, man, and we're gonna make it happen. So, when you look at accountability, it always starts where? At the top. The tone is set at the top. Why? This is the CEO, right? Everybody's taking their performance and behavioral cues from this individual. I know that when I tighten up, all seven companies tighten up. When I get loose, they get looser. Because they're watching me. Am I walking the walk? Okay, then we have structures, and we're going to talk a lot about this. And then we're also going to talk about the personal inspection of work, which we're not going to give the same value that most organizations do. Okay, everyone have their rubber underwear on. This would be an example of your training commitment to everyone that works at your organizations. It's used by us and others. Our training commitment that you will be trained in what? The habits of performing your job to 100% of the standards, 100% of the time, and at 100% census volume. We will never put you in a situation where you can't succeed. You will always know if the standards of your job have been met. And you have the power to correct any process or activity that deviates from the standards. Whoa. I'm not going to go into all that. There's a lot of thought behind this. But if you want to be an elite organization, you will have something like this. You will move to the paradigm of the teaching organization first and foremost, rather than providers of care. You'll be trained in what? Habits. All human activity is based on habits. So we better understand habits and how to create those habits. Beyond this course, this hour, job to 100% of the standards, 100% of the time, and at 100% census volume. The most elite clinical leaders, as we've tracked them over the decades, you'll find that they were able to maintain the financial standards over time, high census, low census, whatever. Why? Because it's just common sense that in an industry or movement, I don't like to call it an industry, it's a movement, we're still revolutionary, of census volume going up and down, that you don't staff with full-time people. We staff 20%. So that, and everyone that would work for me better show me a plan of how they're going to stay within those standards when census is up. Well, I don't want to hear census is down, we lost money. Census is up, we made money. What talent does that take? Obviously, it's the toughest part of the job or the gig. But indirects, as well as clinical teams, are held to that standard. Okay, we'll never put you in a situation where you can't succeed. We thought out all the things that you will probably encounter. We've anticipated these things. We put some thought into it. And we will train you in those things. Okay? You'll always know if the standards of your job have been met. Why? Because it brings the condition of self-control or self-regulation, where I know the standards, and I know if I'm in or out, and I can self-regulate to get back in. A lot of hospices, they don't even know what their standards are. And you have the power to correct any process or activity that deviates from the standards. Okay, anything. If a meeting isn't run to standard. Let's say one of our standards, meetings start on time. What a concept, right? Well, if it's not done right, I want the CNA to be able to reboot the meeting and say, we are not in standard. Or if some documentation isn't done, in our system, it'd be, we identify a problem in the chart. Let's just say Linda here You're the RN. Linda, hey, here we go. Not going to use the word stable here. Okay, anyway. Okay. She then for 24 hours, I own that. And if I look at that in 24 hours and Linda has not done it, it goes up. And she might have a 10% cut in her pay for the next 2 weeks. Automatic. Ooh. Let's keep going. Let's keep it happy. Okay, we see this word, standards, comes up several times in this. Must be important. Okay. A culture of accountability starts with what? Standards. Standards. Okay? Standards are the basis of all people development and accountability systems. They're also the basis of your compensation system, which is part of, would be part of your accountability system. Okay? So what I'm saying here, as far as your people systems, this is what you train people to do. Each of the standards. Teaching each well. We'll talk about how to implement that. At least the major points. So standards are the basis of all people development and accountability. And here's the truth about quality. People can say all this about quality. If you take a look at your organizational or people development system, whatever you want to call it, if your quality of that system is here, your quality is here. If your quality is here, it's here. If it's here, it is no more or less than the quality of your training, indoctrination, whatever. Okay? Why? Because we are, last I checked, we are human organizations serving humans. It's all done through people. And it's a complete fantasy to think that it doesn't happen through people. So here's the real question. If that's the truth, Andrew, how extraordinary is your people system? Can you look at it now and say that's the core competence of our hospice? Take a look at this. It's unlike any other you'd see. Or is it so average where we use preceptors and ideas that went out 10 years ago and stuff like that? Where every time, you know, hey, follow me around for a while, and shadow, and we go through orientation. You know, the cure for insomnia. Okay. When we think about standards, I want us to think about them under basically two broad classifications. First, we have behavioral standards. And the second, we have performance standards. Performance standards are what? Usually numerically denominated, measurable. Caseloads, visits, visit durations, da-da-da, visits per patient per week. And then we come to our behavioral. What are those? Those are the non-measurable. I mean, if you really want to make it simple. And it would be stuff like, you know, meetings start on time or time to meet, ass in the seat. I like that because it paints a picture. Yeah. So all the other things are our standards of dress and hygiene, you know? And most of you know, again, when we're talking about stuff, we design it all around the feeling. Even though we're kind of known as financial, it's all about that experience, baby. It's about designing that phone interaction where it's just beyond any other organization. The teachable, the visit, just perfectly orchestrated, every word, phrase, everything meticulously considered. All based on how it makes someone feel. Because that's all that matters in the end. And then engineering that for an extraordinary economic result. By the way, don't ever sit... I don't like to see organizations say they're world class if they're bragging. That's very unbecoming anyway. If they don't have world class profits, they go together. And our profits should always be, and I'll use that, whether you're for-profit, not-for-profit. like this. It's a natural byproduct of being extraordinary at our mission. And naturally, we have great profits as a result of that. Without squandering. Okay. So what's a standard? A standard is not a goal. It's a norm. It's an everyday activity or result. Now, when you first start doing this, it may feel like a goal. But if you really have some accountability going, it'll happen very fast for an organization. This is where it doesn't take a long time for an organization to go from one place to another. You just got to get serious. And you got to get serious at the top. 100% is the only acceptable standard. Why? Again, if standards aren't standards, call them suggestions. The red light was a suggestion to stop. If you compound a 10% knowledge deficit by 100 employees, your screw-up factor is exponentially increased. Let's contextualize it for clinicians. I mean, is it okay to do a 70% visit? You know? I mean, last time I checked, our return policy in hospice sucks. Hey, we blew the death scene. Joe, get back in the body. Let's do it again. Doesn't happen much. So we've got to be near flawless in this. So 100%. There can be no meaningful discussion of accountability without clear standards. Because what happens? Well, Teresa, come in my office. Here's, you know, you need to fix this or do this. Well, I didn't know that. No one told me that. I didn't get the memo. Okay, let's keep it light. If there's no pain attached to non-standard behavior or performance, your system is weak. Let me pose this question. Do we learn the most through our big wins in life, or those really tough hits? Man, if you've been there, they burn in, right? So, I'm just going to say this. The world is perfectly designed. If we believe we're here to grow, you know, and to evolve our beingness and our what we are. Perfectly designed. But when we talk about standards, again, if somebody goes outside a standard, what is the pain they're going to feel? And it has to happen every time. And it can't just be come to my office and let's talk about it. That's not what I'm talking about. Because we all remember pain. I mean, I'll just do one right now. 9/11. You remember that? All of you right now could probably tell me exactly where you were, who you're with. Is it painful? Is it emotionalized? You remember it. If your accountability system is based on the personal inspection of work, your system is weak. What I'm saying there is if you hire, quote, supervisors to make sure people are doing their jobs, you have a weak system. Why is that weak? What happens when they don't show up? How much accountability gets done? It's just like we got, you know, typical inpatient units losing 16%. Okay, we got some folks, they turned it around. The leader actually learned how to run an inpatient unit, because that's really what it boils down to. Or the folklore is, man, they all lose or whatever now. So for the first time in 30 years, man, this unit's just like doing it. The person gets sick and is out for 3 weeks. What happens to the performance of that unit? Yeah. Okay. So there's a problem with the personal inspection work. Also, it's subject to people's individual energy levels. If you come in and your energy level is down, accountability goes down. Okay, so this is why this can't be the primary thing we use for accountability. Okay? Bad idea. When you train people, you should expect them to make mistakes. In fact, new staff need to make mistakes in order to learn. Who came up with this? I mean, again, it's like the doc that's going to do the operation, take out the appendix, and you know, is it on the right or left? Well, you learn by doing. Every time you make a visit, your reputation is in the balance. And I don't want people making it up as they go. Just like visits. I mean, just even last week, put 15 clinical leaders doing visits, videotaped them and all that. And you talk about lack of, you know, it's just apparent. Most hospices are just making it up. Never assume people know how to do visits nor answer the phone until you've taught them specifically how to do it. Okay, if this is the case, our standards simply aren't high enough. Okay, so standards, big deal as far as accountability. We want all standards that have at least three attributes. That's where we're creating them for our organization. Okay, first is that they're clear. Everybody understands this. The standards. In fact, we've removed the excuse, I didn't know that. Because what is on every card, it's in every hymnal or workbook that you have, it's, how could you not know this? You were tested on it. Next, are they impressive? That is, when I say impressive, they impress us. They're motivational. Hey, is this not cool? Look at standard number three here. All phone calls answered within three rings by a real competent person in the sunny day hospice way. Is that not cool or what? Hey, referral source, take a look at that. Wow. Okay. So you want your standards to be motivational. Third, sustainable. All work done in an 8-hour day. Overtime is evil. We want sustainable standards that don't change. So when you set your standards, even your profit standards, what do we? You know, let's say it's 14%. Don't get greedy with whatever. This is it, and you engineer everything backwards to get that. Which everybody here can get that. But I don't want to burn people out. This is why we don't like budgets. Budgets are like that's a standard. It's a financial standard. We don't recommend budgets. Again, that's another idea that went out 10 years ago. You operate on these percentages that go up and down. Because otherwise the budget's like this, you know, boy, you got that or, you know, and then next year, hey, do a little bit more, squeeze a little more, get a little more juice out of the rind, ratchet it up more. It doesn't have to be like that. That is not a good standard. Okay, standards. You want kind of the attitude, I can do that, I want to do that, I can win in this system. Okay? And we want, what we'll find, when an organization gets serious about standards, a manager's job just starts to get easier. You don't have things breaking. You don't have a bunch of meetings. Most hospices have way too many meetings. I mean, it's like you're issued, asbestos, high heels, you know, when you first joined up, right? Because you just don't have stuff going wrong. You'll meet about some new initiatives, a couple operational, short meetings. But if we're having lots of meetings, it's a sign of something sick in your culture. Okay. I mean, let's face it, if you've got your standards, like documentation, things like that, just flow. You're not chasing paper. Okay, let's keep going. How do you get these things going? Here's the three big things as far as getting standards implemented and in an organization, fusing them with accountability. First, it's a repeat of the other thing. Clearly define the standards. What are they? How do you dress? How do you do visits? How do you answer the phones? Just the basics things where we interact with the world. Next, learn to teach each standard well. Again, this goes back to the people development system. How are you training your people? And I'll just say this. They should be based on the methods of master teachers. That's the primary thing that we do in hospice. When you go back to when our beginnings, when we came out of an idea or a dream from people that weren't paid anything on front porches and in church basements of this country. And it was a teaching situation where we taught who? The caregiver. Where we enable them rather than trying to do everything for them and disable them. But again, how many hospices really teach their folks how to teach? And if you're going to do it, why not base it on the most extraordinary teachers that have ever lived? But I'll tell you one little secret here. Not a secret. Unless you've tested. People didn't. And haven't learned. We could do an incredible presentation here. Just magnificent. Hit every item hit perfectly, and most people will have missed virtually all the major points. Unless you verified the learning. If you're going, okay, Andrew, well, I guess we're not learning anything here. Anyway, we all missed it. Anyway, we'll just soak in it. It's not that bad. Okay. So we learn to teach each well. And I'll just say this. We like to teach on two levels. You've got to teach on an intellectual basis first. Because if you can't think about it, you can't do it. And then you take it down to the emotional space where the real learning takes place. And that's, again, because all memory is what? Triggered by emotions and feelings. So how do you do that? Anyway. Three. You attach uniform accountability to each standard. Or what is the pain for every one of these if you're outside of the standard? Okay? And it has to be uniform. We know this, though. You can have this incredible onboarding system where, you know, you've taught people in synthetic labs and all this stuff where they're perfect. And they come out of it, and if they go to the clinical teams, and the clinical leader goes, you know, you don't really need to know this. I know what they taught you at corporate. But this is how we do it in the real world. They've just destroyed your system. So who do you train first? Always your clinical leaders. Again, if I'm paid to build a hospice, I build it on the strength of developing that clinical leader strata. They're just, they got the system. So then that poses another question. How extraordinary is your leadership development or manager program? Is it incredible? Or do you just take people, good clinicians, and promote them up? It's not even the skill set they need. Okay, our accountability systems have to be uniform. This means that Billy Bob can't have his own system. Okay, I mean, you got Billy Bob out here at location X. Somebody comes in, not in uniform. They got the Mickey Mouse shirt on that day. And basically, everybody has to do it the same way. And maybe it's, hey, Diane, go home. She comes back, complete an incident report, write an essay of how my failure to dress to our standards impacted the team and organization. Or it could be a pay ding. She's got to feel some pain. Otherwise, your standards mean nothing. If you might as well not have them. Unless you're willing to go that far. By the way, pain is another spiritual topic. Right? It's why we're even here, probably. I mean, to learn. Not to be sadistic, you know what I mean? But again, we want to remove the excuse, I didn't know that. Okay, let's talk about the tools or methods of accountability. The first, structural. Self-control. When you've defined them, you've taught them, you've created a condition of self-control where individuals can self-regulate because of the knowledge of whether they're in or out. The consciousness, whether we're in or out, and I can get back into it. I want people to know that so well, not only can an individual self-regulate, but I can look to my coworker on my right or left and tell if they're in or out the standard. And guess what? I have the power to do something about it, which you'd want to have some system, just like the documentation. When it's out, I own that for 24 hours. I have to look, follow up on that. If it has not been corrected, boom, goes up. No questions. By the way, self-control is something that should be taught. It's a characteristic of the most successful people in the human experience. Second, compensation. Most people fear using compensation as a tool. But let's just say this. People behave the way they're paid in all situations. Even Mother Teresa got paid. Every volunteer gets paid. Get paid in what? Good karma. Feeling better. Yeah. Some spiritual benefit. Whatever. We all get paid. All protoplasm, life forms, even the amoeba will gravitate towards even the faintest glimmer of warmth or food. You do the same thing. You think you're sacrificing for your kids. The truth is, you're doing it also for yourself. Why? Because the pain of letting them be wild children is greater than taking the time to provide some supervision. Okay, so we all behave the way we get paid. So the thing is to get creative. And I'll just say this, if our organizations are just using salary or hourly, again, you got a weak system. You got to get creative. I like having components of people's pay that are kind of structured like, almost like a bonus, but they're part of kind of the base. And I'll just call them standards pay. And if you're outside of standard, you know, again, for a 2-week period, 10% of that pay just comes off through the monitoring systems. See, the system holds it together. But if you have a pay system where it can't go back, and not dependent upon people reviewing, you know, I mean, a supervisor doing whatever and say, yeah, you know, I'm going to dock you. People don't want to do that. Most hospice managers are not. This is why it's got to be structural. You want a system that's just monitoring, you know, monitoring the mothership. Okay? So compensation, that's a big topic. And we could go, I mean, days on that. The personal inspection of work, okay, I said that's not one of our primary things, but it's something we still need because there's things that you have to observe and all that. It's definitely still has to be in there. And, but I'll just say this, that you're leading from the front. If you have a standard of cleanliness, you know, I mean, if you're a leader and a toilet needs to be cleaned, clean the toilet. Make the visit. Answer the call. Lead from the front. Be the real deal. Peer reviews. Not a big fan of this, but I know some organizations that do it pretty well. One little bit of advice if you're doing this, I would take the leader out of it, because sometimes they just kind of take a few digs. Just let them rate each other and all that. Okay, incident reports, essays. What's that? It's an accountability structure. Let's use documentation, since most of us think that's semi-important. Why is documentation important? Let's just hit it. When you're teaching it, teach it from two fronts. Number one, it is the basis of any claim of being an interdisciplinary team. It is how we coordinate our care and our love for the patient. So you start there, and it just happens to be something we get paid by. Therefore, it is done. And it is done at the visit, because what do we know? That's 70% of the detail will be lost in 6 hours. So if you don't document, you don't love your patients. You don't care enough. You've not developed enough as a human being to even care for your other coworkers. Okay, so with the incident report here, it might be, let's say you can't do the pay thing right away, okay? Because that takes a little bit of thought. It'll be structured somewhat like this. You know, Joanne, come on in the office that day, as soon as it's identified. Joanne fills out an incident report that she signs. It's kind of a signed confession. And then they write basically an essay of how my lack of a documentation impacted the team. And right there you will find out if you're working with children or adults. And I prefer to work with adults. The child will go, I couldn't do it because of this, 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 this. I couldn't do the standard. And the adult says, I should have did that. Go ahead, paddle me. And be okay with that. Next one. This is one that, when we're dealing with clinical leaders, they have to be taught this because it's kind of uncomfortable at first. The public posting of scores and results. You know, if you have a standard, and let's say it's an annual certification on phone interactions and the visit. So everyone has to go in the lab and do the visit and all that, test out. Those that have not done it by when it was supposed to be done, their names go up in front of everybody in a public place. Here's the thing. When you get these standards, your turnover will go down to minuscule numbers because you will actually mean something. Believe it or not, when I say that when you take your standards up, you become a more attractive organization, that is exactly what's going to happen. Your turnover is just going to be decreased because you got these high-quality people. Easier to manage people. But what do we have in hospice? We got turnover rates for nurses of 30%, 27% for social workers, 23% for CNAs. There's no way you can even be close to doing quality with that kind of turnover. Turnover is a destroyer of quality. So we have got to evolve ourselves and our organizations to be able to attract and retain the talent. Okay. Even our financial reports. I don't like financial reports unless they have people's names. Who is responsible for what? So every financial report, there's the area, that's the name of the person, and you can see where they are within the standards, whether they're winning or losing. And a few of your comp system tied to it, you know where they're at. Okay. Now, accountability. There's a punitive feel about it, right? Some of you go, ooh. How do you take that punitive feel out of it? And here it is. You attach spiritual principles or values to each standard when you're teaching them. What is the central demographic of people that work in hospice land? We are spiritual people. Most of us, we believe we're more than a physical body. We here, we're called. We're here for meaning and purpose, even as much as people want to. That's who comes to work at a hospice. We're part of the great transition from one life to another. Most hospices do not nourish this. When people come to an organization, they want to be paid well, so we've got to get past all the poverty mentality and thinking. We can pay better than the hospitals if you manage well. And then you provide folks an electric, dynamic, vibrant spiritual atmosphere. So with each principle, what would be a spiritual principle that we would have to just meeting starting on time? Because I'll just say this, if people, it's respect of time, right? Respect of life. And if they're late at meetings, they're late on visits. I guarantee it. So we're going to help them evolve. Anyone that works at the organization. So we could do that for all of these and contextualize it like that. Okay. But that spirituality thing is, you can't just like drop in the spiritual engine, right? It would take the leaders, especially the CEO, having a Damascus or Revelation type experience where they're moved sufficiently to start thinking on this. And not confusing the need, again, here in the C1 consciousness of reality, the stuff we can touch, being able to translate that into the mission of a hospice. Here's an example of a report for those that can see it. You'd have your teams, clinical teams, Sue Brown, Jen Lentil, where their direct labor is, it's associated with your standards, patient related, admissions, all this, you know, finance led by Captain Crunch, you know, we see where he is, you know, IT led by Sid Vicious. You always wonder where he went after he left the Sex Pistols. Okay, now we know. But it's all there, bare naked, transparent, we see. Okay, and by the way, in this system, I do not believe in people getting individual financial statements. That's another idea that went out. No departments where we put everybody's stuff together. Write out column-wise indirects as well as directs. Clinical. Here's a clinical, for example. Like, let's say you had 5 or 6 teams or whatever, you break out, you get their financial stuff, then you have some of your caseloads and visits and average visit durations. Again, standard stuff you would track every month if you're really managing the hospice. Okay, let's say you had compensation and you had a team portion. We always like it when you get individual pay, team pay, organizational pay, standards pay, of course, which you should get every pay period, because when we're doing the standards, all we're asking you to do is to do your job. Do this. There's no stretch here. Everything's... In fact, I'll just say this. If you're doing standards, you don't even have to do annual evaluations. By virtue of somebody still working at your organization, they're doing the standards. And that's no kidding. Because you know every day whether you're in or out. I don't need someone else to tell me at the end of the year, yeah, you're a good boy. You know, there's 5, you know. Or we're feeling a little tight. We didn't make much money last year. You know. Haven't had a raise in 3 years. Anyway, so we lay them out here. Let's say, so we have our south team, north team, whatever. We've got the name of the person. And let's say for the last 3 months, I'm on the south team and I haven't got my team pay. North team did. Pretty soon, what am I saying? Can I transfer to the north team? I want to work for a winner. And that's good. I will say this, and this has to do with your numerical standards. When you're setting the standards, normally you'll set a minimum. Okay, that's the floor. This is what you need to do your job. Obviously, a clinical leader has to have some discretion. You know, if you have 6, 7 patients in decline that week, yeah, you might, let's say the standard for a nurse is 20 visits and you did 18. We get that. But that doesn't happen all the time. So you set up the minimum, then you attach the excellent. And here's the kicker. If this, let's say it's visits, or let's say it's caseload. Let's say this is 12 for minimum. I just increase it a little bit. So maybe I'll make the excellent 14. So if you do a little bit more, you get $250 or whatever your incentive piece is. And I want people, or everybody to hit the excellent. It's no big stretchy here. But what happens if you put that gap 5, whatever? That becomes a demotivator. I want someone to look at that and go, I can win. Sign me up. I want to work at that hospice. As far as your performance standards, again, your numerically denominated ones, these should be based on your ideals as well as external references. And this is where benchmarking. Wherever you get your benchmarking, you got to have that perspective. Your benchmarking is the only thing that's going to make you a professional. Because if you don't know where the movement is at any point in time, how can you really manage? How can you even, I mean, it's one thing to know how things are calculated, but you need to be able to walk into any hospice and take a look, you know, how it's computed, and render a judgment, a professional judgment, that's good, bad, or mediocre performance. That's a pro for all of the major things. Also recognizing that there's always, whenever you're looking at that kind of stuff, there's a practice behind every line. Now, I will say this as far as, again, the numeric stuff. All measurements are what? Flawed. And you have to train people with this. All measurements are flawed, right? I mean, if I ask again what time it is, you know, we could all look at our watch, might be off a minute or two here. I could ask what the temperature is, we could all get our little devices or gauges and a little warmer over here, you know. I could ask what our ages were. We could be off by decades. Every accounting number we've ever looked at is professional estimates, whatever. So what? Here's the deal. You take whatever you have and you start to use that to operate your organization. Because if you're flawed, at least, you know, you're probably consistently flawed. And then, so measure anyway, and you know if you're going up or down, even if it's, you know, not the best. I just remember my first hospice, and this is years ago at Winston-Salem. I remember, you know, I went in with my little weenie report, because, you know, and I said, could we, like, increase productivity a little bit, you know? I mean, we were doing the morning and the afternoon visit. I mean, we knew how to do both kinds in the hospice. Anyway. And then the nurse manager said, well, no, Andrew, did you back out the admission visit? What about the extended care visit? Did you consider this? And all I know is that you could look back towards finance, and there's this little drops or stream of blood as they basically decapitated me, all these kind clinicians. I don't put up with that crap at all anymore. You just, whatever data you have, you crown it king, golden. I don't care if you're using a patient management system, you run three reports, you get three different results. You say, this is the gold standard. You will be judged on this. You will be paid on this flawed information. Because normally it's not that far out. And guess what? Their behavior will correspond. And when I say that people behave the way they're paid, let's just use it on an organizational level. Let's just say that Medicare says, hey, we're going to change the way hospices are paid. Do we say, well, that's nice. We're going to keep doing it the way we've always done it. No, we like, call the meeting. You know, we change our behavior. That's just the way human organizations and human beings, all protoplasm, work. Okay, let's talk, and we're getting ready to wrap this up. Let's talk about time frames around accountability. Clinical activity. Your hot dog hospices, and there's a difference between a hot dog and a weenie, operate on a weekly basis. It seems that human beings can organize themselves quite efficiently around a week's period of time, so that's why we do it this way. So, you'd find that most metrics and things like that would be done on a weekly basis. So let's say let's just use the 20 visits for a nurse example, which is a completely reasonable number. And we don't say visits per day. Why? Because I don't want them to feel like they're a cog in the machine. I'm going to say, you know, Mary Sue, it's great to have a nurse of your quality here at Sunny Day Hospice. Take as long as you need to do the Sunny Day Hospice visit. World-class experience. But just know at the end of the week, I need 20. Not 19, not 18, 20. My job as a leader is to help you to be successful in the system. If you don't do this, the system will take you out. You gotta have some fun with this. Come on. But that's all true, though. I take nothing. That's the way it works. That is the way you set it up, baby. The system. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about structures. So first week, you know, Betty Lou, we take a look at the weekly visit report that summarizes all the visits by clinician. And there's 19. Well, what do? You got to give them the flash. 19. You know, you got it, you know. And I would actually go back and I would write it, you know, take a note on that. Okay. Okay. Week two, it's 18. Okay, not quite just the flash thing. It's more like, hey, Eric, you know what our standard is. What is it? Thank you. Okay. Week three. Come to my office. Have a seat. Here's our standard at Sunny Day. Here is your performance. Now, let me help you. I'm going to be riding with you today. We're going to take a look at this. This is where documentation has to be at 100%, folks. Clinical leaders do not have to chase that. I mean, it just needs to be coming in. And if you do this, you know, there are hospices with virtually 100% documentation. Yeah, and I want world peace too, Andrew. But you got to have the accountability thing going on. Heck, we did it the very first hospice I ever worked at. It was years ago. Okay, fourth week. What do? It's the two roads cost. It's like, Betty Lou, come here. Have a seat. And when she tries to talk, what do? Put up the arm. You shut it down. Ah! Have a seat. Here's our standard. Here's your performance. Betty Lou, I want you to take the rest of the day off and think about whether you want to work at Sunny Day Hospice. I've got somebody to cover your patients. This meeting is over. Ah! When she tries to talk. Don't get sucked in the drama. It'll take you all 5 minutes to do that. People have to be taught how to do this. And what happens half the time? They don't come back. It's like, hey! The problem solved, you know. And if they come back, they're under their own our own focused review. You know, we're going to be watching like a hawk. Okay? That's what it takes. But, like I say, if you're really doing it, if that person turned in a 19, again, their compensation automatically, if they're either missing a piece of documentation or anything on that, there'd be a little ding in the paycheck. Automatic. Manager has to do nothing. That gets the attention. The first time we ever did it at a hospice, it was like overnight. 200 clinicians. It's perfect. You know, and you could read it. This is back before EMR. Any one of us could do this if we really wanted to and get serious about it. But you got to define what that documentation needs to look like, teach it. It's a standard. And because I've been to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hospices. And most, I mean, I'm just going to say it sucks how we teach people. And then we complain that Medicare is like this big bad thing. By the way, when I say 100% of the time, let me just clarify what that means. Because I know we've all fallen from grace. You know, that no one's perfect, Andrew. How can you do it? I'm saying, look at that from a day-to-day standpoint. If you have 100 clinicians, could all of them document to your standards for a single day? Probably. What about 2 days? Probably. What about a week? Probably. Then one person goes out, but they can self-regulate and get right back in. That's with the system. Again, you get this down, your hospice will go to a different level of quality. And your life as a manager will just be much, much, much easier. And there'll be a pride that'll swell in you that, I mean, it's just like, wow, we really work for a hot dog organization. So with that, I think we're about out of time. And here's the last point. How do we lead always when we're leading? We lead by example. We want to be a real honcho and not the Sears poncho, in the words of Frank Zappa. Why I threw that in, I don't know. So, yeah. So anyway, y'all go make the world a better place, you know. Thank you.